Greetings, everyone. This is Sherry, the Secretary for the Registry Stakeholder Group. Welcome. And I would like to request... I would like to request that the recording be started. And while that's being done, just a few housekeeping details, if you will. First of all, so everyone knows, your lines will not be muted during this call. However, we would very much appreciate and request that you keep your own personal line muted for purposes of background noise. And Keith will explain the ground rules as far as the discussion of topics and question and answers. And audio streaming will take place in the Adobe Connect room. And if questions are to be asked out of Adobe Connect, they will come in from Adobe Connect chat. And as a reminder, if you would, if the floor is open and you are speaking, we would very much appreciate it if you would please announce your name and your affiliation for purposes of the recording.
Please go ahead. This afternoon's conference call is now being recorded.
Thank you so much, Tim. And I'd like to introduce Keith Drazik, the chair of the Registry Stakeholder Group, who is moderating the call today. Keith?
Okay. Thank you very much, Sherry. I appreciate that. Thanks for giving us some ground rules there. And just would like to reinforce that everybody please mute their phones. Before we begin, I just noted that Evan Leibovich has said in chat that the Adobe Connect room is apparently at its limit and new joiners are being rejected. I'd like to see if there's anyone, if there's any way that we can expand the limit or to find a way to get those people in. I regret that that's the case. At the very least, this session will be recorded and transcribed, so if anyone is unable to join today, there will be a record for full openness and transparency. Marika says they're looking into correcting the Connect limit. So, but in light of that, let's go ahead and get started. We have a very full agenda today. So good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. I'm Keith Drazik, Director of Policy at VeriSign and current Chair of the Registry Stakeholder Group, and I'll be your moderator for today's call. I'd like to welcome everyone who has joined today's meeting on ICANN's proposed amendments to the new GTLD Registry Agreement. So thank you for your interest and for making the time to participate. This session is a community-wide consultation focused on the proposed changes to the new GTLD Registry Agreement that were announced by ICANN on February 5th. I think, as everyone knows, the public comment period on this issue closed on February 26th, and the reply period now closes on March 20th. I sincerely hope that this will be a constructive conversation that helps to move us forward in a predictable and transparent way towards a goal that we all share, the timely, responsible, and successful introduction of new GTLDs. With substantial input from the NTAG, our new TLD applicant observer group, the Registry Stakeholder Group has taken the lead in coordinating and hosting today's community-wide call because we have some very significant concerns about many of the proposed changes, including concerns on process, substance, timing, and implementation. That said, we don't want to monopolize this conversation or have it be a one-way engagement. So to everybody on today's call, we want and encourage your thoughts and input. You'll see from the agenda that's on the Adobe screen that we've reserved more than an hour of the two-hour session for dialogue, question and answer, and interaction from all participants, so I encourage everyone to join this conversation. To that end, let's cover two brief but important housekeeping items. If you have a verbal question or make a comment on the phone bridge, please be concise and keep your intervention as brief as reasonably possible. We have a long way to go and a short time to get there. And if anyone has questions or comments that don't make it to the phone bridge, please feel free to post them in the Adobe chat room. We plan to consolidate the written input into an FAQ for submission to ICANN for their review and response. So I'd like to note for the transcript and for all participants that we're fortunate to have participation of ICANN staff on today's call. And this includes ICANN CEO Fadi Chahade, who will say a few words after I make some introductory comments and before we kick off the formal agenda. So thanks in advance to Fadi for offering to join us today. I've been advised that the ICANN staff is primarily in listening mode for today's call, so let's be sure to capture the most critical questions for their review and response. following the call. So a quick review of the detailed agenda. I'll note that for each of these agenda items, we've allocated about 5 minutes for an overview of the issue from the registry stakeholder group perspective, and then at least the same amount of time for open interaction and dialogue. We've allocated about 10 minutes for each specific agenda topic. So first, I'll provide some introductory comments on behalf of the registry stakeholder group. We'll then have remarks from ICANN CEO Fadi Chahadeh. Then we'll get into a detailed discussion of the proposed amendments, including an overview of the picket fence, proposed language around the unilateral right to amend. Then we'll get into a detailed discussion on Specification 11, Section 1, requirement to use only registrars that have signed the 2013 Registrar Accreditation Agreement, Section 2, a description of the public interest commitments, or PIC, and Section 3, the enforcement of PIC specs and the PIC DRP. We'll then go to a discussion of ICANN CEO's expert working group on directory services, and then the proposal that enforcement of rights protection mechanisms should be shifted from ICANN to the registries. We'll then open it up for 20 minutes of a discussion and a dialogue around next steps forward. And the idea there being we really want to make this constructive and be able to, you know, move this forward so that it does not become more of an obstacle than it has. And then if time permits, I'll provide a summary of action items and concluding remarks. So as we go through our very full agenda, and bear with me here, I'm wrapping up, I think it's important to underscore that we all, as participants in the ICANN community, have many common interests. We're all committed to the multi-stakeholder model of internet governance and recognize, for better or worse, that ICANN is currently the most visible example of that governance model in action. We're all committed to the successful, responsible, and timely introduction of new GTLDs, which is currently the most visible example of ICANN in action. We're all committed to ICANN as a strong professional organization that's well-positioned to execute its narrow technical mandate. And ultimately, the ICANN community really needs ICANN, the organization, to meet and exceed its own obligations in the multi-stakeholder, bottom-up, consensus-driven policy development process. So before I hand the microphone to Fadi for his remarks, I'd like to give a very brief overview of our three most pressing concerns while leaving the detailed substantive discussion for the next part of the call. First, the timing of the proposed comments. ICANN published the February 5th proposed amendments nearly 9 months after the new GTLD applicants spent hundreds of millions of dollars in anticipation of the introduction of new GTLDs based on the final agreement as published in the June 2012 final applicant guidebook. Now, 8 years after the new GTLD process began, but only 2 months before ICANN plans to recommend delegation of the first new GTLD, ICANN is proposing fundamental changes in material provisions of the final agreement and seems, in our view, intent to drive these substantive changes without due consideration. We have to ask, how is this consistent with ICANN's obligations under the affirmation of commitments? Next, we're concerned with the process ICANN followed in proposing these comments. In the February 5th release, ICANN surprisingly reinserted language giving ICANN the unilateral right to amend the new GTLD registry agreement. This language was initially proposed by ICANN staff in 2008 and ultimately removed from the applicant guidebook in 2010 following extensive community discussion that included the ICANN staff. So we've had to ask, why is ICANN now taking a second bite of the apple with regard to the unilateral right to amend proposal after that issue had been long resolved through the bottom-up multi-stakeholder process? We're also curious about the ownership of ICANN's decision-making. Following the February 5th webinar and posting of the proposed amendments, we came to wonder who was pushing these substantial changes at the 11th hour. Did it come from the General Counsel's office, from the ICANN board, ICANN's leadership, or a combination? From our perspective, the decision-making that led to these proposed changes has not been transparent. Finally, since the beginning of the year, we've heard a lot of discussion coming from ICANN about the need to improve perceptions around our industry, including Fadi's comments in Amsterdam following Davos, and in comments made during and following the various CEO roundtable networking events. We believe that several of these proposed changes to the registry agreement and the timing and process for issuing them actually undermine the perceptions of ICANN as an organization committed to the multi-stakeholder model. So with that, I'm at the end of my allotted time. In the spirit of keeping to the agenda, I'd now like to welcome Fadi Chahadeh and thank him for his willingness to join this community call, to engage with us, and to listen to our concerns. So we're pleased to honor his request to say a few words. And thank you. Fadi, over to you.
Keith, thank you very, very much for a great introduction and an explanation of the concerns that you have. I want to thank you for the leadership and VeriSign's leadership in putting this thing together, also in your role within the GNSO. Thank you for that. It's good that we are engaged in this discussion, and I have deep appreciation for the fact that we're discussing things and we're trying together to find a way forward. So I'm delighted by the effort. I'm delighted by this call specifically, and I'm glad that it was organized, and I thank you for it very, very much. I really mean that, because I think without dialogue, which is exactly what we should be doing, it appears any action from ICANN may appear heavy-handed or top-down, or as you said, in violation of the spirit of and the policies of the multi-stakeholder model that is frankly, as I said today here in Dubai, is the only legitimacy we have. Our legitimacy comes from the fact that we all work together to make these calls. And if we don't, then frankly, we lose that legitimacy. So I very, very much appreciate everything you brought up, and I thank you and the team here for starting the process of giving us input and feedback on these agreements. I'm going to make just a few comments to set the stage, and I'll be able to stay with you till the top of the hour, so that I can listen and learn. But my intent here is mostly to listen, listen and then listen some more before I get back to Los Angeles and confer with our team so that we can move to the next step together. And so I'm really largely here to listen. I just wanted to share with everyone some feelings and thoughts that I have, not specific to any particular points that I'm sure we'll be hearing more about in the minutes ahead. But I want to share something with you. I am, frankly, I remain sometimes puzzled, sometimes amazed by how we move from discussing things as a community to a mode of accusations. And it's just not healthy when we do that. When we imagine the ICANN staff that they sit in the basement and plot all kinds of things to cause difficulty for our community or to maneuver certain things in the community, we frankly, I mean, I certainly don't have the time to do this, and I know that my team didn't as we were coming up with these recommendations. So I hope we get into a mode of less, thoughts that are not based on collective goodwill, and move into a space that says, well, why might the other party be coming up with this at this moment? And if it doesn't make sense, and if the other party cannot make sense of it, then let's discuss it. This is what reasonable people do all day. This is what communities, and especially in ICANN, we've done. So I'm inviting everyone, frankly, with all the good faith that you know I've injected into my day-to-day work here, and that I'm trying to convey across all of my work at ICANN. I'm asking us to not get into some volleys that I've seen of accusing people of deception, of, you know, bad faith. This is not our intent. This is not the intent of the ICANN team. And if we don't get out of that mode and instead have what I would call really open, frank discussions about the importance of one clause or one requirement or another point, then we're not going to, frankly, be able to get to a solution. The second thing I would like to talk about is this also feeling that I'm getting from the community that we're rushing things for a reason. The only reason for rushing things is because I sincerely believe that the release of new GTLDs is good for the market, It's good for the users. It's good for the world. It's a good thing. If I did not believe that, I frankly would not be rushing this. And I've told you this before. I've shared this before. So, yes, in Amsterdam, I was sharing amongst us my feelings, as I explained very well in the subsequent blog, that, boy, if we could take more time, it'll be easier. But in reality, we really owe it to the market. We owe it to the world. Having been in China and Korea and Japan and the UAE and London and France just in the last 10 days, most of the countries we visited, and especially the countries that need our IDN GTLDs in order to expand their market, they need us to move. They need us to make this happen. The market is ready. All of us are ready. So I'm not rushing this for any nefarious reason or for any reason to hide anything. I'm rushing this because I believe it is in the public interest and it's in market interest and the global interest that we move forward and get this thing out the door. And lastly, on the issue of public interest, I don't need to explain to all of you who know this space far better than me that we are facing some important phase here between GAC advice and GAC warnings and also public outcry in some cases about the commitment to what many new GTLDs put in their applications. And you were next to me, if you haven't, when governments at the GAC suggested that we take the entire application of every new GTLD applicant and make it enforceable. ICANN does not want to become a law enforcement agency. This is not what we want to be or we will be. ICANN also understands that people put things in their applications because, they were thinking this is a business plan model rather than a legal device. I understand all these things. And therefore, I think we came up with this solution that would allow us to navigate through a potential block completely to this situation and allow you to step up to the plate, declare your public commitments based on what you think is reasonable, is feasible, is enforceable, and we move forward. And we solve, I think, a debacle that could go on for months and months. So, I want to close by bringing up a point that was brought up at the roundtables. There is a big concern that we do have some current GTLDs sitting on contracts, and that these contracts, if maintained as is, would provide or create a situation where new GTLDs are at a disadvantage. There is also potentially also the situation that we find ourselves with some things enforced on new Gs that would put them not just at a tactical disadvantage, but potentially at a business disadvantage, a strategic disadvantage against current GTLD. I've told the leaders at the CEO roundtables that I'm acutely aware of this, that I'm not going to, as I can, ignore this point, that I'm going to tackle this point in good faith with the current GTLDs, and we will work together to find the best solution forward. But we must understand that this juncture is a juncture where the world is watching if the ICANN contracted parties are on their own able to embrace the responsibility, govern themselves with solid agreements, allow us to move forward from this point on. So this is a very critical time. And I stop here. I tell you that I want to assure you that I'm going to be carefully listening. Nothing is done. We put out an agreement for you to give us your input. So I'm listening, and I will keep listening until we all together figure out what's the right way forward. You have my commitment on that. So Keith, back to you.
Thank you very much, Fadi, and I really do appreciate your comments and the time that you've made for us today. You know, I take to heart your, you know, your call for us all to work in a more collaborative and collective way, and in good faith across the entire community. And so, I really do appreciate everything that you've said. The your comments specifically around being responsive to governments, I think all of us understand the need for ICANN and for applicants in the community to work with governments, particularly around early warnings and potential government objections and GAC advice. So I think conceptually, the PIC spec, and we'll get into more detail around this, the PIC spec that's been proposed, I think many of us understand, but we still have some pretty significant concerns about timing and implementation and being able to really flesh out some of the detail around enforcement and the dispute resolution processes. So I want to say that I think we are here in good faith wanting to work with ICANN and the community on something that would accomplish these goals. But as I said, we'll get into more detail on that. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much, Fadi, for your comments. And let's go ahead and just jump right to the agenda. So first up, we have an overview of the picket fence, a brief overview of the picket fence from Becky Burr. So, Becky, over to you.
Thank you, Keith, and good morning, good evening to everybody. I understand very clearly that someone scores on the ICANN bingo card every time I say the phrase picket fence.
You want some?
I'm sorry, I'm getting a lot of feedback.
Yeah, one moment, please, Becky. Please, everybody, mute your phones if you're not speaking. Thank you. Becky, go ahead.
Thanks. So even though that's the case, I agreed to provide a history of ICANN's policy authority in 5 minutes or less. This is a pretty complicated subject, but with only 5 minutes, I'm going to have to be pretty blunt. In a nutshell, the picket fence is the source of ICANN's legitimacy. And it is consciously the source of ICANN's legitimacy. ICANN, as we all know, is not a government or a regulator. It does not derive sovereign authority via its contracts with registries and registrars. It's not constrained by constitutional or other guarantees of due process, nor is it informed by years of judicial interpretation of fundamental protections for those who are governed. Rather, ICANN was conceived as a coordinating body with a limited charter. At the beginning and at the end of the day, ICANN's authority is derived from the agreement of registries and registrars to commit in advance to be bound by policies that do not yet exist but are developed in the future through the multi-stakeholder process. This commitment is balanced by ICANN's corresponding commitment to constrain its policy development activities to specific issues. When I talk about the fundamental bargain that is at the heart of ICANN, that's what I mean, an agreement to abide by policies that don't yet exist so long as they are within a specified scope. As the third wheel in the negotiations that produced the first registry and registrar agreements, I can say with absolute assurance that ICANN exists today because of the fundamental bargain that emerged in those discussions. Registries and registrars agreed to transfer limited prospective power to ICANN based on commitments related to the scope of prospective rulemaking. This fundamental bargain does not just exist in the registry and registrar agreements. It's embodied in ICANN's bylaws, which were themselves the product of a comprehensive exercise in intense organizational introspection, otherwise known as the 2003 Evolution and Reform Committee. So what's the fundamental bargain? I don't think I can repeat this enough. In exchange for the coordination services provided by ICANN, registries and registrars agree in advance to comply with and bear the cost of future developed policies, so long as those policies don't unreasonably restrain competition and relate to a specific and highly articulated set of issues that lie within the picket fence. This authority to impose prospective obligations on registries and registrars is extraordinary. It does not exist in ordinary commercial contracts. To the extent it exists in government contracts, it's cabined by an undertaking on the part of the government to bear the costs of those changes. Only government regulators possess the ability to impose new and unanticipated obligations on commercial actors. Regulators are, of course, subject to elaborate due process requirements, administrative procedures, and lots of jurisprudence that is not available in the ICANN context. In addition, the DNS simply doesn't have a lot in common with typically regulated industries. Domain name registrations are not subject to substantial shifts in supply and demand. Supply reliability can be achieved through precautionary techniques, and the interruption of one source of supply is not associated with substantial social costs. So, absent some global regulatory mandate, ICANN's authority and legitimacy is the product of a bargain, which is constrained by a picket fence that prevents mission creep and provides a reasonable degree of predictability for commercial actors. But no one should be confused here. It is still extraordinary, and it is not limited to situations that threaten to destabilize the DNS or the Internet. Indeed, it also encompasses issues for which uniform or coordinated resolution is reasonably necessary to facilitate interoperability, reliability, or stable operations, and policies that relate to the allocation of domain names and the resolution of disputes regarding registration, including who is, UDRP, and many other items. This authority is pretty broad. And allows ICANN to impose obligations on registries and registrars over their objections. We wanted to start the dialogue this morning by recalling the picket fence and its role as the fundamental bargain that's the source of ICANN's legitimacy and authority. It provides important context for the community's reactions and for this discussion this morning. And it's important to remember that the picket fence protects both the contracted parties and ICANN itself. So I hope we can keep this in mind as we go through the rest of the discussion this morning.
Thanks very much, Becky. Appreciate the overview and sort of introduction, giving some context as it relates to the picket fence, both in concept and in reality. So I'd like to open it up now for discussion, dialogue, questions, anything on this particular topic. If you're in Adobe, please raise your hand and I will call on you. If you're not in Adobe and would like to speak up or ask a question or comment, feel free to do so now. Okay, anyone? Going once, going twice? All right, thanks, Becky. Appreciate it. Let's go ahead and then move on directly to the presentation from Jeff Newman on the unilateral right to amend, which is really the follow-on to the conversation about the picket fence. So, and maybe if anybody has questions about the picket fence, we can pick them up following the discussion about 7.6. So, Jeff, over to you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Keith, and thanks, Becky, for that overview. My presentation actually dovetails well on Becky's presentation on the picket fence, and I'm sure you'll hear the word multi-stakeholder a lot more often in what I'm going to say. So, as was said, you know, in the beginning by Keith, 5 years ago in 2008, ICANN staff tried to unilaterally increase its authority over registries by proposing a new amendment provision for the new GTLD registry agreement that allowed the board to unilaterally amend the agreement by a two-thirds supermajority vote, regardless of whether there was consensus of the community in support of its amendment. It merely had to show that the modification or amendment sought by ICANN was justified by a substantial and compelling need related to the security or stability of the Internet or the domain name system. It should be noted here that this was even a more limited version of the amendment provision than the one that we're going to discuss today. And as you can imagine, and as Becky kind of reiterated, ICANN's unilateral attempt at that power grab in 2008 was extremely contentious and thoroughly rejected for all of the reasons that were cited by Becky. After trying to get this on the agenda for a good year and a half, finally in 2010, at the request of the ICANN board and existing ICANN management at the time, the community came together and compromised on yet an additional mechanism to amend the GTLD registry agreement. In fact, it was ICANN's outside legal counsel, Jones Day, in Marina Del Rey in April of 2010 that initially proposed what became known as the compromise amendment provision. And that new provision, as reflected by ICANN staff when it released that compromise to the public about a month later, it said that, quote, ICANN will have no ability to unilaterally amend the registry agreement. Rather, after consultation with and the vetting by a working group, ICANN may propose amendments to the registry agreement that, if approved in the manner set forth by the agreement, it would automatically amend all registry agreements that contain the new amendment provision. ICANN staff told the registries at the time that they would set up a standing committee, a kind of legal working group, if you will, to discuss these issues on a routine basis. I will note that no committee has been set up, although it's been mentioned several times to ICANN staff that we, the registries, both the existing ones and the new ones, were certainly willing to set up this committee to work on any changes, but that never came to fruition. The multi-stakeholder compromise that's reflected in all the versions of the applicant guidebook since 2010, including the final applicant guidebook under which over 1,900 applications that were submitted, was agreed upon by the entire community. And that compromise, and when I say entire community, I'm talking not just about the registries, the registrars, the contracted parties, but the non-commercial interests, the governments, everyone that weighed in had the ability at the time. There were no negative comments that were received on the compromise provision. In fact, the community declared it as one of its greatest victories. It's one of the few things that you can see in which everyone agreed with the compromise. And that compromise, we should note, already provided a conceded mechanism to impose changes outside what Becky talked about as a picket fence in order to deal with the potential unknown things that were out there. In an interview last week, ICANN's CEO repeated the mantra that the world has changed since that compromise was reached. But many of us were left scratching our heads. The only thing that could be pointed to that actually has changed is that instead of 500 new TLDs, which ICANN staff had foreseen, we now have potentially 1,500. And sure, those numbers may be greater, but the fundamental principles, the basic building blocks upon which ICANN was founded, have not changed. There needs to be a much better justification for imposing what can best be described as top-down regulatory authority, other than the world has changed. ICANN has told us, well, you know, don't worry about it because we're only going to use this amendment process where there's a substantial and compelling need. But many of us are asking this question. Where was the demonstrable, substantial, and compelling need to change the amendment provision 4 weeks ago? In fact, as John Berryhill pointed out in his comments, what happens tomorrow when the ICANN board says, you know what, a two-thirds vote is not, we no longer want to do two-thirds of a vote of the board. We actually want to lessen that because we have a substantial and compelling need to do so. Or what if the board decides by two-thirds supermajority that we don't even need to do a substantial and compelling need? We could just change the whole reason for passing amendments. Look, the fact is that no business should have to operate in a world where it cannot predict the scope of things that might change, and that is what's being proposed by ICANN. A contract by which one party can unilaterally amend the agreement is not a contract at all. And to sum it up, in response to ICANN's concerns that the picket fence is too limited, through a multi-stakeholder process, we included a new process in the new GTLD agreement that is not limited to the picket fence. If you want to change the picket fence, then you need to use the process that we all came up with, unless you're making the case that most of the registries are irresponsible and we cannot be trusted. Then you must give this compromise that we already struck the chance to work. We're not saying this process will never be able to change or that the process we put in place is perfect. It's far from it. But we are saying that we worked for a good number of years for a compromise, and now without even seeing if this compromise works, ICANN staff is advocating for a change. Good faith mandates that we try the model we've worked so hard to come up with. And Fadi's right. The world is watching us. But that world doesn't just consist of governments, but it also consists of civil society and also business. Some of the largest businesses from around the world are watching us. Public companies that have obligations to do what is right by their shareholders, they are also watching us. Changing the agreement to require or to allow a unilateral right to amend is not the way to do this. It's not the way to show the world that we are a maturing industry, and it's not the way for us to show the rest of the world that the ICANN model actually works or how the model works. It's time for ICANN to withdraw this proposal, which has been unanimously rejected again by the ICANN community, as evidenced by the comments. Let's move on with the compromise in the June 4, 2012 applicant guidebook before condemning that proposal that has never been given the chance to work. Thanks, Keith. I'll turn it back to you.
Okay. All right, Jeff, thanks very much for those comments. We now can move into we have 10 minutes for dialogue, discussion, Q&A on this specific issue, before we then move on to a discussion of Specification 11 and the PIC specs, et cetera. So let's go ahead and open it up. If you're in Adobe Chat, as I said, please raise your hand if you have anything you'd like to add or questions that you'd like to submit. If you're on the phone bridge, please go ahead and speak up now. I just have to note that if nobody actually decides to speak up and participate in the dialogue, we're going to have to listen to Jeff more. So it's time to get active.
And I got plenty more to say.
Okay, then I will intervene to save everyone. This is Fadi.
Thank you, Fadi. Fadi, go ahead, and then Ron yes. Andruff has his hand up in chat. So go ahead, Fadi. Thank you.
I just have a quick question to Jeff and to the team. When Jeff says the community must agree to the change, who is the community here? Does it include, say, and I don't know, so I'm asking, does it include civil society? Does it include governments? Does it include really the full multi-stakeholder community, or just the registry who would then be concerned with that change to their contract? I just need clarity.
So this is Jeff. I mean, it starts with the registries, and the discussions start with the registries, and ultimately goes out to the community. Because even if it has to be remembered that even if the registries do, for whatever reason, do not agree with the proposed change, ICANN does have mechanisms that are built into the contracts, either through the consensus policy process or through the temporary policies to impose changes on the registries. I also see Becky's hand raised, so Becky may want to address this question as well.
So, thanks, Jeff. Becky, are you raising your hand in response to Fadi's question? Because I know Ron Andruff is also in chat.
Yes, I was. I think that I want to make sure that we are addressing Fadi's question. I think that the provision in the new GTLD agreement, which allows passage of an amendment to that contract with the support of the registry constituency, does not require further policy development process unless it's amending existing consensus policy. So it is a more flexible amendment tool. And I just want to, just in case that was what Fadi was asking about, make sure that we note that.
Okay. Thanks, Becky. Fadi, did that answer your question, or do we need to clarify a little bit more?
To be frank, no. I think Jeff was closer to where I needed to go. Ignore the current agreement. I'm just asking, in the current way it's done, if the ICANN team, for some reason, proposes a change, it goes to the registry, if it's a change to the registry agreement. My understanding is it goes to the registry community, stakeholders group. You guys will review it. You may come back and say, yep, that's good. We'll go with it. And that ends the discussion then. Or you may say, no, we don't want to go with this. So is our only next step at that point in the current regime would be to essentially try to make a policy happen that would go through the GNSO, and then if approved, it would change the agreement? Am I understanding this correctly? It's not like we go beyond the registries to ask the community what they think about that change before the registries refuse it, is my understanding. I just want to clarify that.
Okay, thank you, Fadi. Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, I think as I was saying, if it's within the picket fence, then it can absolutely go to the community, and it can absolutely be part of the consensus policy process. If it's outside the picket fence, things like the term of the registry agreement, pricing, then yes, that requires the agreement of the registries. And when I say the registries, I don't mean every single registry, but there's a mechanism in there for a supermajority of registries to approve that agreement, or that, I should say, that amendment. So, like I said, Fadi, if it's part of the fundamental bargain, the whole cornerstone, the linchpin of the way ICANN was formed, and it's within the picket fence, then absolutely can go out to the community. If it's outside that picket fence, then it needs to have, just like any private contract, it needs to have the agreement of those parties that are subject to the contract.
Hey, Keith, it's John Nevitt. Could I weigh in as well?
Thank you.
Sorry, yes, John, one second. Fadi, did you have anything you wanted to follow up there?
Just saying this is exactly what I was looking for. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Fadi, and thanks, Jeff. John, I've got Ron,
yeah,
Ron Andrew.
Let me just weigh in on this one point because I want to make one clarification, and then with Ron's indulgence, if that's okay.
Okay, go ahead, John. Thanks.
So when Fadi mentioned the current system, I assume that he means the current proposal or the current contract that's in the applicant guidebook. Under the current system, which is the current registry agreement structure, each registry has the ability to approve on its own whether they want that change or not. So one of the big changes between the current system and the one that's actually in the guidebook and that was approved through a community dialogue and discussion is that there's a drag-along right. So if a majority or a supermajority of the registries approve, then all the registries would be bound by that amendment. And that's a big change from what's in the current system, where each registry individually has the right to negotiate its own contracts. And underpinning all of that, as Jeff mentioned, is the PDP process. So all registries are bound by changes via PDP, but under the current guidebook agreement, every registry is bound by the will of all the registries or the majority of the registries based on an ICANN proposal. So that drag-along right is a big change that occurred in the 2010 compromise. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much, John. Ron, finally to you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Keith. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. I wanted just to comment earlier, your comments and your approach are very, very helpful in so much as you're trying to bind the organization behind common ideals and common focus, and that's admirable. And I think we can all move to that as we grow and mature. One of the issues, of course, is that the unique nature of ICANN is that our structure is such that all sides push against the middle. So every element is brought forward, whether it is the non-commercial's point of view or whether it's a contracted party's point of view. Often these are diametrically opposed, and they may be on either side of the circle, and staff and the board are in the middle and feeling the pressures of these things. But I think that if you continue to lead us forward, reminding us continually that we need to work together to make an ICANN that is really the ideal that we're looking for, I think we'll get there. So thank you for that. The comment I wanted to bring forward with regard to this specific topic is the idea that we're a consensus-based organization, and therefore when you ask who in the community will give the right to make a change, it's really about all voices coming together and that groundswell going in one direction. Unfortunately, there are so many things going on within the ICANN universe that many of us are distracted by other things. So sometimes that groundswell doesn't look like much but a blip. But that blip is, in fact, a pushback or a support or whatever it might be. So the issue here is that we want to have fair and equitable agreements in our transparent organization. And that's the really difficult issue to achieve. So many of us in the community may or may not agree with what's happened here with this idea of unilateral contract changes. But at the end of the day, it has to be a consensus-based agreement. I hope this helps. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much, Ron. Okay, anybody else on the phone would like to weigh in at this point? I don't see any other hands in Adobe. Okay, final thoughts or comments on the unilateral right to amend language? Going once, going twice. All right, very good. Let's then move on to a conversation on Specification 11 as proposed in Sections 2.7 and Spec 11. There's three sections. Section okay. 1, requirement to use registrars with the, that have accepted the 2013 Registrar Accreditation Agreement that has yet to be finalized. Start with that one and go to John Nevitt.
Thanks, Keith. So, yeah, we're going to talk about the PIC spec on Spec 11 of the proposed changes. And as Keith mentioned, divide them up into three subparts. As a whole, the community has not reached a consensus on PIC spec a good thing or not. There are certainly those PIC spec is a very artful way for ICANN to respond to the GAC advice and have application commitments made into contractual obligations without carrying around, you know, 300-page applications. There are others who think there, you know, some parts of the PICs are problematic, but we do certainly have consensus in that PIC spec number one, which requires the use of only registrars that have signed the 2013 RAA or any subsequent RAA approved by the board, is problematic. And it's problematic for a number of reasons. And we'll divide that up into two parts. First, the 2013 RAA. So if the registrar community has not approved the 2013 RAA terms, the new registries are very concerned that this will put them at a competitive disadvantage to the incumbent registries in that a registrar could opt not to sign the 2013 problematic RAA and stick with the 2009 one until their terms of those RAAs are up, and then they would only be permitted to sell the incumbent TLDs and not the new TLDs, which would put us at a competitive disadvantage and jeopardize the success of the new TLD program. So, absent support of the 2013 RAA changes by the registrar community, we are very concerned about this PIC spec number one. We understand and support ICANN and the registrars in their negotiations and coming up with a new model RAA. I personally helped negotiate the 2009 RAA, and when we did that, we had an incentive, more of a carrot approach, where because there were additional requirements in the RAA that were costly, ICANN lowered the per transaction fee for registrars who signed that at that time the new RAA and didn't stick with the old RAA and gave a financial incentive. We think that approach probably is better than the stick approach that we have here. We also encourage ICANN and the registrars to come up with and agree to a drag-along process that I mentioned earlier in my response to Fadi. So that way you don't have to have this system where there's, some registrars operating on different agreements. If you have that drag-along process, as we have in our registry agreement proposal in the guidebook, you could have that in the RAA, and we wouldn't have this problem. So that's the first part. If the registrars sign on to the 2013 RAA as a group, then, you know, I think there's a little more comfort. There's no comfort whatsoever in the parenthetical, which says, or any subsequent form of the RAA approved by the ICANN board. There's no limitation on that. There's no requirement that the registrar support that. There's just if the ICANN board comes up with a new RAA, then we can only sell through in 2015, 2017, whatever. We can only sell through registrars that sign that new form. And remember, we're all, as new registries, required to use registrars as our sales channel. We don't have a choice in that matter. So we strongly encourage ICANN to delete that parenthetical and delete the reference to the 2013 RAA unless and until, at a minimum, they have the registrar community support of the changes.
Okay. Thanks very much, John, for the concise and constructive comments there. Very clear. So let's go ahead and open this section up to discussion, dialogue, questions, and answers. I'm looking for hands in Adobe chat or anybody on the phone that would like to speak up, ask a question.
Keith, this is Steve Metalitz. Could I ask a question?
Absolutely, Steve. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's really about the first part of what was said. And characterizing what is proposed here as a stick approach, isn't it really a carrot approach that if a registrar wants to be involved in the new GTLD market, they have to sign up to the 2013 agreement? After all, they don't have a God-given right to sell registrations in every new GTLD. It's always been up to ICANN to accredit them in a particular GTLD. So why is this any different? I understand it could be done through in the registrar agreement, or it could be done through through a registry agreement. There might be some differences there, but why isn't this really a carrot to encourage registrars to sign up to the new agreement rather than a stick? Thank you.
Yes, Steve. Thanks for that question. And you could phrase it as a carrot or a stick to the registrars. You know, I think it's more punitive, saying you can't have something unless you do something, and you're implying that the current agreement is so problematic that absent the change, they can't do this. But I don't think anyone would dispute that it's a stick to the new applicants, the new registries. The stick is you're not going to get the sales channel that we're requiring you to use absent this something that's out of your control. And that's the really problematic stick that that's part of this proposal and something that is patently unfair and could create a really anti-competitive landscape.
But could I follow up just for a second? Isn't it the case under the current agreement that you can't use that channel unless ICANN approves the registrar to sell in a particular new GTLD? I mean, it's certainly true in the existing GTLDs, right? There's an annex for each registrar agreement about which GTLDs they're accredited to serve. So I don't see this as a difference in quality from that.
Okay, thanks, Steve, and thanks, John. I see Amadeo had his hand up and Jeff has his hand up. Amadeo, do you want to respond to this point or this question from Steve, or do you have another comment?
No, I raised the hand before that.
Okay, so let me
before
let me
last
ask
comments you. From Steve.
Amadeo,
he's on this topic. Can you hear me?
I can, but one moment. Let me just see if Jeff wanted to respond to Steve, and then we'll come back to you if that's all right.
Okay.
So, Jeff, did you have a response to Steve, or were you going to talk about something else?
Yeah, I mean, I think just a quick response to Steve, and more in line with what John was saying, is that ICANN does, as you said, have the right to accredit registrars, but there's also obligations not to treat to single any TLDs or registries out for disparate treatment. And when John is saying about a competitive marketplace or an anti-competitive marketplace, you're going to put registrars in the position of saying, you know what, I'm okay under this existing agreement. I'm just going to continue to sell COM and NET, the two largest TLDs, you know, 120 million names under management, 85% of the marketplace, if not more, the GTLD marketplace. And so there will be registrars, and registrars have said that they will do it. That's, you know, forget it. I'm just going to continue to sell the old ones until the very last chance I have. And so that's unfair to the existing applicant. And so that's one of the points you need to consider. That's it. Thanks.
Okay. Great. Thanks very much, Jeff. Amadeo, over to you. Thanks for your patience.
Thanks. The two comments I wanted to do here is that first, I'm Adele Bulliabril from CORE. We are observers currently in the registry stakeholders group. the two comments I wanted to do is that is I'm a little bit puzzled about the systematics of this provision. This isn't a peak specification that's finally voluntary. If this is so important to ICANN, why don't they make that mandatory if they do other things like, you know, unilateral right to remain, et cetera, et cetera. So if doing this is so important, why should be there as a mandatory, voluntary part of that specification? It's a very strange solution, systematically speaking. The other question that's surprising from a systematic point of view is that, indeed, this is a carrot for the registrars, but it's placed on the registry agreement. So probably, the ontology of carrots is misplaced because it's somehow asking the new registries to place ourselves, the carrot, on the registrars. Now, on the theme itself, I would say that CORE is not that contrary to the provision. I mean, we really believe that it makes some sense that given the evolution of the registry and registrar markets and numbers in the future, ICANN tries to place somewhere some guarantees that, you know, registrars will have some incentives to migrate to the latest version. But the way it's done here seems very poor from a legal point of view and from even an incentive point of view. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Amadeo. I appreciate that. Matt, over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. Matt Serlin, I'm the chair of the Registrar Stakeholder Group. I just wanted to pick up on the comment that Jeff made, and again, thank him for eloquently stating the point, and John as well for summarizing it. But the point that I'd like to make really is in concert with Jeff, that the stakeholder group, never mind the rest of the ICANN-accredited registrar community, really runs the gamut in terms of size, sophistication. You know, everyone thinks of ICANN-accredited registrars as, you know, the top 10 or top dozen or whatever it is, but there really are much smaller registrars out there in the world that, to John's point, will be perfectly fine continuing on under the 2009 RAA. Whatever the final 2013 RAA ends up being, it will dramatically raise the bar for registrar operations. The responsibilities that a registrar will have will dramatically increase, and I will absolutely echo Jeff's point and say that there are definitely members of the ICANN-accredited registrar community that simply will wait until the last moment to sign that 2013 agreement because the responsibilities that fall upon them will be so much dramatically increased from 2009. So thanks, Jeff, for making the point. Just wanted to reiterate that.
Thanks very much, Matt. Do we have any other comments or questions on the phone line?
This is Fadi. I'd like to say something, if I could, because I'll be leaving in a couple of minutes here, if I could.
Of course, Fadi. Please, go right ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to give a heads up that our discussions with the registrar's negotiating team are continuing. We had a very good session also on Friday, and we'll have another, good session tomorrow. We have agreed with them on Friday that we will be releasing the new RAA 2013 tomorrow on Tuesday. Tomorrow on Tuesday, yeah. So I think, you know, it will give a chance for everybody to take a look at the agreement and where we are, where the RedStar team is, where we are. It's going to be clarity for everybody in that regard relatively now in the short time here in the next hour. I also wanted to clarify that I understand, and I've received many notes and helpful input from all of you about this restriction on this. I invite you to a couple of things. Help me make this work for the following reason. We're going to have, today alone here in Dubai, we met with leaders of the entire Arab community, telcos, government, civil society, businesses, the CEOs of some of the largest telcos were here. And we discussed how 400 million Arab people here have five registrars.
Fadi, excuse me. This is Keith. I apologize for jumping in, but we're having a bit of a hard time hearing you. So if you could either speak up or move closer to the microphone. Again, I apologize for interrupting.
Oh, no problem. So I think I was just describing that we're expecting a significant growth in registrars. Today, the community here agreed to form a working group so that every country in this region, and there are tens of them, will be committed to work hard to accredit at least 5 to 10 new registrars in the next year. So I'm expecting this community of registrars to grow significantly as our engagement activities around the world and the new TLDs and the IBN TLDs get released. So we need, please understand that it is important for all of us to have a registrar agreement that gets us to, as close as possible, a truly well-oiled market. Today, we do not have that. We have an agreement that is not signed uniformly. And I think it would help us all to prepare for the growth in the market with a standard agreement. Now, on John, I think it was John who mentioned the stick versus carrot. I must tell you, I think if we try to put a carrot into this, this as an incentive for people to sign this, how am I going to make any argument to regulators and governments that our industry is self-governing? I think we should think hard about that if we are trying to project the image that we have a self-governing industry. Putting carrots does not help my case. It actually usurps completely the image of a structured self-governing market. And lastly, I would like to say that I am also aware, as someone who's run businesses, that there's going to be costs involved in implementing some things. There's going to be time required in implementing something. And I'm open to hear back from you on ways we can work around that, and possibly maybe we create a transition period of sorts so that people feel that they have time to get ready properly to live under this new agreement. But please think of the bigger picture and why we're trying to get the market structured and organized before we see what I think will be significant global growth in areas many of us have not been to or worked at, that will be trying to get accreditation and joining our community. So that's all I wanted to share. Back to you, Keith.
Thank you very much, Fadi. Appreciate that. And I know you may have to leave shortly before we move on to the next topic, which is the PIC spec, which I'm sure is a particular interest to you as you relate to governments during this process. Amadeo, I see your hand is up still. Is that from before?
Yes, it's a forgotten hand.
All right. Thank you, Amadeo. I'd just like to ask that I've been asked as moderator to request that everybody clarify who they're speaking on behalf of, or as you know, whether it's a company, a stakeholder group in their individual capacity, just for the purposes of the transcript, and so ICANN staff understands, you know, where we're all coming from when we speak. So thank you on that logistical note. Okay, before we move on, are there any other discussion points, questions, Q&A, input on the Section 1 of Spec 11, the use of registrars under the 2013 RAA? Okay, going once, going twice. Let's move on to then Section 2, which is the description of the Public Interest Commitment, or PIC. And I've got Staten Hammack. Staten, over to you.
Thanks, Keith. Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining the call today. My name is Staten Hammack. I'm with United TLD, a new applicant for top-level domain names. We've applied for 26 top-level domain names. For this segment, I'm going to briefly highlight some concerns that have been expressed by the community and some of the comments submitted recently with respect to this particular section, Section 2 of Specification 11. It's the section that asks registry operators to identify which sections of their application, which commitments, statements of intents, and business plans that are found there, they will commit to. And it also introduces for the first time the dispute resolution proceedings associated with enforcement of the public interest commitments. So from the reading of the comments, there have been basically four challenges or concerns that have been raised with respect to this particular section. The first is sort of an overarching question which asks, have we overlooked the fact that the registry agreement in its final form in the guidebook published in June includes many requirements and specifications which are contractually binding, of course, which address many of the concerns raised. Performance specifications, escrow agreements, service level requirements, data access requirements, equal access requirements, the code of conduct, registration policies, and many other sections of the current registry agreement, all are enforceable, all require registry operators to be bound by these provisions, which some have wondered whether that has been sufficient enough. Is sufficient enough. With respect to the challenges, there's three challenges that the community has raised. The first is the timing of the requirement. Even though we've had roughly 30 days to since the new changes have been released for comment, many have expressed concern that's hardly enough time to look at every commitment, every business plan, every intention stated in the agreement to try to predict what would be reasonable for a registry operator to commit to that would be contractually binding and enforceable by ICANN in this agreement. So we're being asked, registry operators are being asked to, you know, make commitments when that takes some time, and second, there's no real clear reason for doing that because the GAC has not yet actually issued GAC advice, so it's hard for registry operators to feel comfortable that what they put in the public interest commitment will in fact address all of the GAC concerns. That's the first challenge. The second is the breadth of some of the language in Section 2. The language I refer to is specifically the requirement or the request to commit to all statements of intent, statements of business plans, and commitments. And again, as I mentioned, that requires registry operators to parse out each word of their application because the Section 2, unlike Section 3 of the specification, requires you to list the sections in their entirety. So business plans being what they are and being subject to changes in market conditions and consumer behavior, it's hard for a registry operator to consider what business plans will be going forward and whether they should be subject to penalties, potentially termination of their registry agreement if those business plans change and they have to make a change. And finally, the third challenge is with the introduction of the dispute resolution proceeding, it's hard to really understand how that will work without more specifications around the dispute resolution proceeding. It's mentioned here for the first time, but as it's a new concept for the community, it's uncertain or unclear how that's going to operate. And how, in addition to that, how also changes to the public interest commitments may be made with changing business plans or things of that nature. So I'll stop there because there may be other concerns not yet expressed by the community that haven't made it to the comment section, and people may want to raise them now. Thank you, Keith.
Okay. Thanks very much, Staten. I appreciate that. So let me go ahead and open this issue up, particularly section. We're talking about Section 2 of Spec 11, the public interest commitments. You know, we've talked about timing. We've talked about sort of the definitions or lack thereof. So let me go ahead and open it up. I don't see any hands in Adobe. Is there anybody on the phone who'd like to speak up?
Yes, this is Anthony.
Anthony, go right ahead. Thank you.
I'd like to point out also that this is a point raised by John Berryhill on the registrar side, that the exclusions to this, to the ability of the board to unilaterally change the contract, doesn't even apply to this exact provision. So the board could vote to be able to do whatever they want by a majority, and that would stick. And I'm sorry if that's off topic. I realize it might be, but there it is. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Anthony. Okay. Anyone else on the phone bridge? Come on, folks. There's got to be more conversation around the PIC spec. This is a big deal. I see some folks in chat are typing, and I should just note that we will be capturing the chat, the Adobe chat, and sharing the transcripts of that following the call as well for openness and transparency purposes. So if anybody who's active in chat would like to speak up, you are more than welcome to do so. In the meantime, I see Staten's hand is up. Go ahead, Staten.
Keith, thank you. I just wanted to highlight something Christina Rosette just mentioned in the chat, which is there hasn't been a public statement by the GAC that they've actually weighed in on the PIC and have said whether it's they're wholly in support. Other than the NTIA in the United States, who encouraged registry operators to submit PIC PICs, there hasn't been any other statements by GAC members saying that this is insufficient or in support of
it. Okay. Thanks, Staten. Jeff, I see your hand.
Yeah, I mean, I would also just say there seems to be a lot of confusion around the PIC, in that, especially if you look at what ICANN and even Fadi talked about on this call and others about what they expect from the PIC, and also what the U.S. government, for example, expects out of the PIC specs. It seems like the U.S. government in their statement basically expects everything that a registry commits to be put into the PIC spec, whereas it seems from ICANN's initial statement of, you know, releasing why they were doing the PIC spec, it's a much more limited view. As Fadi said at the beginning of this call, we don't expect everything that a registry, the entire proposal to be part of the PIC spec, but in actuality, it looks like that's almost what's expected by the Department of Commerce. So the whole fact that there seems to be a different interpretation of what the PIC spec actually means between what one government believes and what ICANN believes, and frankly, what a lot of applicants are questioning, and that PIC spec is due tomorrow, there's a lot of confusion out there, and I think we need to set the record straight.
Keith, if I have still a minute, I'm kind of now in transit to my next meeting, but I could help Jeff and others clarify this point if it's helpful.
Absolutely, Fadi. Thank you so much. Appreciate you're still with us. So go right ahead.
Okay. So, and again, forgive the background noise. I'm in transit now, but you're all very smart people. I know you can read very clearly what happened here with the PIC. We had to find, in my opinion, a reasonable compromise to address the two extremes. There is an extreme coming from government quarters, and I have met with the U.S. government as well as with the EU Commission, as well as with many governments during this trip. There is a perception that we should take everything in this application, lock, stock, and barrel, and make it an enforceable contract. That's an extreme. On the other extreme is, frankly, you know, do nothing and let's hope for the best. I think what we did here is we tried to find a good compromise. governments, and I talk to many of them, Jeff, as well as the U.S. government, are watching us very closely on how we behave around the banks. They're watching, and I think, in my opinion, they're not looking, most reasonable governments are not looking for a lock, stock, and barrel. I think if they see us acting responsibly around the PICs, I think we may have a very subtle but clear way out of a lot of delay to the program. So I assure you that there isn't an expectation that we, well, some governments do have that expectation, but there's no need, in my opinion, for us right now to be thinking that we must take everything in these agreements, lock, stock, and barrel, and put it. But I also do think that we should not flirt with this. We should not say, we'll pass and see what happens. I urge you, you've had now a period of time to think through this, and I'm sure most of you have thought clearly through this. It is very important that you err on the side of putting what's necessary so that we can navigate through this. So I suggest we move as quickly as possible in that regard so that we can solve this thing quickly. And I want to assure you, all of you, that I will do my absolute best with the governments, with the EU, with the U.S. government, and with the GAP to secure what I would call reasonableness around all of this. I know that many of us don't like to behave or to act simply because governments are raising a stick. But I think on this one, I'm urging all of us to be wise and to do what's necessary so that we can navigate through this particular canyon right now. That's all I'm going to say, and I hope you'll appreciate that I'm doing this in the best faith for all of us here to get this program off the ground.
Fadi, this is Anthony. This seems to be a new concern by governments. Can you explain where this came from? Because we hadn't heard of these before.
I will check to my team to correct me, but I attended at least a couple of GAC meetings and calls where governments were voicing, especially in Toronto, a very clear requirement to ICANN to take the entire new GTLD application, believe it or not, and make it a contractual, enforceable device. The entire agreement.
Thank you, but Toronto is somewhat after the guidebook is published. I mean, they've known about this for a long time, so it seems there must be some new impetus.
I mean, if someone on my team is better than me at explaining this, I mean, all I know is that some of them are under either the impression or the assumption that the commitments that people wrote in their applications, lock, stock, and barrel, should be enforceable commitments. Either they didn't understand that before, they didn't focus on it. I don't know. So if someone knows better, please speak up. Chris Despain may know better, or others on the call. But I was clearly there when many of them voiced without any nuance that they expect everything to be enforceable.
Fadi, it's Chris. Guys, I can just say a couple of things if you'd like me to.
Thank you. Thank you, Fadi. Thank you, Anthony. Go ahead, Chris. Thank you.
Well, I agree that the applicant guidebook has been finished for some time, and I agree that this shape of a public interest commitment is new. But I think a number of GAC members, including, and maybe I'm sensitive to it, the Australian GAC member, have raised for some time, and certainly quite some time before Toronto, the question of how will applicants be kept to their commitments. And as is often the case with these things, they take shape over time. So whilst I acknowledge that, you know, referring specifically to the public interest commitments, you can say that it's new, I don't think you can fairly say that the discussion on how to keep applicants to their commitments and the flag having been raised of it being an issue is new. And I mean, I'm happy to go into more detail if that helps, but that's, in a nutshell, that's how I see it.
Okay. Thanks very much, Chris. So we've got a couple of folks in queue. First, Amadeo, then Alan Greenberg.
Okay, that's Amadeo Abril from CORE, Internet Council of Registrars, an observer in this Registry Stakeholders Group. Regarding the PIC, FADI, and staff, I mean, we are in a position as CORE that we support the idea that everybody should be held, you know, to their promises, at least to their policy promises, to the registration requirement promises, which I'm not saying that's our, you know, restrictions, but, you know, how they describe it, how their TLD should work, which does not mean that, you know, they should keep to the promise of how many marketing guys they will hire in the next 3 years. I think that this is irrelevant for anybody. Now, if that's true, and now if GAC wants these things, the instrument you have proposed is very bad for all this. Let's imagine that my application raised concerns, but Anthony, Jeff, or some other people submit PICs. It doesn't do any good to the problems that I will raise in the future. So you're asking the good guys to come, you know, in front. It, you know, make believe the gag that everybody will behave. This is, to start with, nonsense. Right, you know, good people would behave. Normal people would behave. Most people would behave, but some will not. It's probably the ones that will not submit the biggest specs. Second, if that's so important, then do that mandatory for everybody. And third, if the problem is, you know, people should be held responsible to the commitments they made, then don't make that a unilateral declaration of anything, even outside the application. This is what the PIC is today. It's simply come here and say what you want to say now. It's not reflect here what you said in your application. So you're allowing even to change the application, which in itself is troubling. So first, I don't think you are solving the problem. And second, you are creating a new problem by allowing late unilateral change of the applications. Even if that's not the intent, the instrument, I think, is, you know, ill-advised and very, very, very dangerous. And I repeat, I completely share the concern that many GAC members have, and I share the idea that, in general, people should do what they said they will be doing in their applications. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Amadeo. Alan Greenberg, over to you. Alan, if you're speaking, we can't hear you. Let's give you a moment to unmute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, go right ahead. Thank you.
Okay, sorry. I had unmuted myself 3 minutes ago, but I guess it didn't take. Regarding timing, I find it unfortunate that the GAC waited until now to make a statement like this, but it's not a new concept. I've been involved in the new GTLD process since very early 2007, not as early as some people, and it was raised at that point. It was understood by many people that there was an expectation that whatever people asked for, that's what they would do. And, you know, that never made it into the agreement. I find it rather sad that today ICANN has had to do it in a voluntary way. But let's be honest, it's not a new concept. It is a new formal statement from the GAC, but it's not a new concept. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much, Alan. Jeff Newman, your hand?
Yeah, I mean, I do want to point that it's basically making it sound like registries or applicants don't, you know, could say anything they want in the application and do something completely different. I just do want to point everyone out to the rep and warranty that's already in the registry agreement, which says that all material information provided and statements made in the registry TLD application and statements made in writing during the negotiation of the agreement were true and correct in all material respects at the time made, and such information or statements continue to be true and correct in all material respects as of the effective date, except as otherwise previously disclosed in writing by registry operated to ICANN. Now, is that the perfect rep that all the governments are looking for? No, not by any means. But, you know, the issue here is that you have to at some point balance the need to have flexibility with what you said in order to be able to adapt to market conditions and to other conditions that exist. And right now, any changes to the registry agreement need to go through this RSTEP process, the Registry Services Evaluation Panel, which I have to tell you, as having gone through it many times for .biz, is one of the most arduous processes and lengthy processes that ICANN has. Now, I think it's gotten a lot better, but it's still very lengthy, and the amount of change requests that ICANN is going to get because of people of forcing everyone to file PIG statements, if that's what's intended, is just going to be astronomical, and I don't think ICANN has thought through the ramifications of what it's going to be like in year one when you get a couple hundred changes that need to go through the RSTEP process because of this PIC process. I know how difficult it's been for ICANN to just process the small, trivial change requests with the applications. Think about all the change requests you're going to get in day one or in year one after the PIC specs become part of the contract. So I'm not speaking out against the PIC specs at all. In fact, I think there's a lot of merit to them and to voluntarily making disclosures, but I just want to bring that up as something that ICANN needs to think about.
Thanks, Jeff. Alan, I see your hand is still up. Is that from before?
I'm sorry, I forgot to lower it.
Okay, no problem. All right, so we've got next up is Brett Fawcett and then Chris Despain, and we're going to need to start wrapping up on this particular topic so we can move forward with our agenda. So if there's anyone has any final thoughts or comments on this, get them ready, and then we'll move on after Brett and Chris and any final comments.
Thanks, Keith. I missed a little bit of what Fawcett said in the last time you spoke. It broke up a little bit, but I wanted to ask if ICANN could very shortly provide a new timeline for PIC submission. All of the applicants have received a notice asking us to submit a PIC by tomorrow, March 5th. That was problematic for a number of reasons. It came out of the blue. We didn't know it was – we haven't had a chance to discuss it much as a community. And the public comment period was still open at a time when we were asked to comply. So, and another point, I don't see why you couldn't submit a PIC at any time, why it has to be by tomorrow. So I'm very much hoping that ICANN can shortly issue a clarification, change the timeline on that, so people don't feel like they are doing something that is still subject to change in public comment or missing a deadline.
Okay. Thanks very much, Brett. Chris, over to you.
Thanks. I'll try and be brief. I'm going to speak personally. I want to address a couple of things that have been said. Amadeo and Jeff specifically, the current warranty clause is fine, but it only warrants up until the date that you sign the agreement, and there is the challenge. If you have made an application for a string that, and you've said in that application that you intend only to issue names to a particular class of people in some sort of regulated environment, the advice from the GAC is we want some mechanism for ensuring that you stick to that, so we know that that's okay, and we then won't object. And that the current warranty doesn't do that. It takes you through only till you've signed. And on the timing point, I'm not sure that Brett is. I think Brett may be correct. You may well be able to put in a PIC at any time. But part of the issue for this is to get the timing dovetailed so that the GAC is aware of the PICs and can therefore withdraw any. Withdraw is not the right word because there's no formal mechanism for it, but not proceed with any early warnings, and or not make an objection, which they would in the event that no commitment had been made. So I'm not talking as to whether it is possible to extend the timing, but simply putting in place the connection that needs to be made between the GAC's decision and the decisions as to who puts in what pick.
Great. Thanks very much, Chris. This is Keith Drazik, acting as moderator today, but I'm going to put myself in the queue here just briefly. On the question of the PIC spec, I mean, clearly, as has been discussed here today, the PIC spec is designed to, in part at least, help with to alleviate government concerns, whether it's government concerns expressed through the early warnings, a government objection, presumably GAC advice. I think that, you know, in my opinion, the current timeline is completely unreasonable, and that the fact is that if we are trying to use the PIC spec to alleviate government concerns or to address government concerns, then that PIC spec ought to be available following early warning, government objections individually, or GAC advice. There's a response period, as I understand it, following a GAC advice to the board for an applicant to respond. Why shouldn't the applicant be able to submit a PIC spec at that time? I think that these are things that we need to talk about as a community and that we need to really work through, and I don't believe that's been done yet. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any final questions or comments on the PIC spec concept and the proposal before we move to a discussion of PIC enforcement and the PIC DRP? Anyone on the phone? Okay, very good. Let's now move to the discussion of the PIC DRP and enforcement of PIC specs. And I think we've got John Nevitt talking about that one. John?
Thanks, Keith. This is John Nevitt speaking on behalf of Donuts. And then Keith asked me to touch on this topic, so I guess on behalf of the registry stakeholders group. NTAG didn't really talk too much about PIC DRP, so not on behalf of NTAG. So the PIC DRP process is undefined. It is not in the agreement, not in the proposed agreement, so it's hard to rely on what's in there, especially as applicants. Many of us are, as Fadi suggested, looking at providing PICs and issuing the PICs, but it's hard to give a commitment when we don't know what the rules are around enforcement. People might remember that there are other dispute resolution processes that went through a great deal of community discussion. Certainly the PDDRP, the post-delegation dispute resolution process, went through a lot of give and take. And the RRDRP is also in the current applicant guidebook, or the registration restrictions dispute resolution policy. And so those went through a lot of community discussion. It would have been better had ICANN put in this PIC DRP process and the rules around it. I do note that ICANN proposed changes to 32 different sections of the applicant agreement or the registry agreement here, and we're really boiling it down to the two or three that they needed to do based on GAC advice or GAC interventions. These other ones, you know, unilateral right to amend, use of registrars, things like that, weren't in response to the GAC advice that they got on contractual commitment. So it would have been far better had they spent the time, instead of on the other 29 proposed changes, to finalize the PIC DRP proposal so that applicants would be in a position to know what they're signing up to when they provide public interest commitments. And I think Staten touched on most of what I was going to say anyway, so in light of the hour, I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much, John. So let's open it up now. Any questions, comments, follow-up, discussion, or dialogue on the PIC enforcement and or the PIC, PIC DRP?
Hi, this is Anthony, since no one else seems to be in the queue. I know that we know that one of the possible remedies in the PIC DRP is termination of the registry. Is anyone on the call who can give us some color on what some of the other remedies are and exactly how these are seen to be brought up and what are the standards of proof or evidence or whatever? Is anyone on ICANN who's here can speak to that? Because that is obviously, even without the whole PIC DRP set forward, these basic points should be communicated. Thank you.
Thanks, Anthony. So open up for anybody who would like to respond to Anthony from ICANN or anyone else. Okay, Jeff, go right ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can't answer Anthony's good questions. I think we're going to need to submit that in a in our FAQ to ICANN to get a better answer. But I mean, I will say that this is what the registry's recommended, is that we start a policy process on this very point, as to develop these policies and procedures. I think going back to the post-delegation dispute resolution policy, that took years of the multi-stakeholder process to finally work its way out and produce what was an acceptable dispute resolution policy. And the same thing with the URS and all the other dispute policies out there. I think we should follow that example, not just assume that what worked, what dispute resolution mechanism worked for one is going to work for the other. And so let's get that started. Let's get, you know, if this is in fact going to be solidified in the agreements, then let's start it up. Let's send a letter to the GNSO. Let's get a PDP or at least a policy process started right away.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Anyone else? In light of the time, I'll just take this moment to note that we have just over 20 minutes left on today's call. We have several items to yet get to, and we wanted to carve out some time for next steps forward towards the end of the call. So I think we need to move on. So unless there's any final comment now.
Hey, Keith, it's Jordan Buchanan. Can I make just a very brief comment here?
Yes, please, Jordan. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so this somewhat relates to this overlaps a little bit between the last discussion and enforcement, but one thing that's not very clear is if in response to government advice or government concerns, an applicant wishes to essentially commit to something that wasn't in their original application, or in some cases maybe even the tree to their original application. It's not at all clear how you would do that. In fact, it seems like if you were to check box 2 in specification 11 and box 3 and try to do something new, you would create an impossibility in that scenario when you're trying to alter essentially alter the application through the PIC spec. And there seems to be some indication you should use the change process for this, but the change process seems to imply that it's only for errors that were made in the original application. So I do think somehow ICANN needs to outline a process. If this is really to address government concerns and potential changes to applications from government concerns, I think ICANN needs to be a little bit more thoughtful about how applicants might actually go through that process.
Great. Thanks very much, Jordan. And that's Jordan Buchanan from Google for the transcript.
Keith, this is Fadi.
Yes, please, Fadi.
I'm going to have to sign off. May I just say something on this? I'm going to ask my team to address these questions that were posed by Anthony Vancouvering and the last speaker from Google urgently. I think these are valid, very reasonable questions. If there is either lack of clarity on how people can add potentially new commitments in the form, or if there's, please, let's quickly get a memo out, do something, but I certainly wish to support clarity here. So I'm going to ask Sam and JJ and Cyrus to please address this request. I also, Anthony voiced some clear questions as it relates to the resolution processes and issues. I strongly suggest that we issue some clarity on this as well, so people are clear as to at least what is our vision or view of how this would work, even at a high level. I also finally would like to add, and I know we're running out of time here, and I will sign off right after this comment, I don't think we can delay the submittal of the PICs. I think Chris Despain made it very clear, and I agree with him. If we do, then we will definitely not have GAC come back to us with their committed advice in Beijing. So I'm just being clear. If we don't, if we delay, they are even arguing with me in Europe when I was there, how are we going to get everything on March 5th and publish it on March 6th, as we committed to them? Because they said if it's March 7th or 8th or 9th and it starts slipping, it's getting too close for us as governments to really get our advice together by Beijing. So at this stage, unless we want to basically get them to do this advice beyond Beijing, we should stick with the 30 days or so that we have been asking that people focus on this and get it done and make it happen. I really would encourage us all to focus on that and make it happen so that we can keep the schedule that we committed to the folks on the GAC. So I will stop. If there are further things, Keith, that you think I could be helpful with, do please send me an email after the call. I'm very, very happy to help any way I can to clarify things and to continue in this excellent spirit. I must thank you and thank everybody I heard so far for the positive, committed, open spirit on this call. I mean that. I didn't know what to expect, but I'm delighted that we're talking and discussing, and hopefully we can come out of this with the right agreement, and an agreement that we can all look at and say, we rose to the opportunity. Please remember that at the end of the day, these big commitments are about showing how we self-govern, how we are responsible for what we do. It's a lot more than just, frankly, checking a box for the GAC. It gives us the presence and the position that as an industry, we did, at the end of the day, commit to some public things for the public interest. So I urge us to please keep this in mind. And again, thank you, Keith. Much appreciated. Sorry that I have to go. I wish I could stay, but I can't.
No problem. Thank you very much, Fadi. Appreciate your participation and the participation of ICANN staff on this. Our goal here was to be constructive, and we're not finished yet, but our goal was to be constructive, and I think that we've accomplished some of that. Just on the point of the picks, my fear is that the rush to the March 5th date it really risks undermining, in my opinion, whatever benefit or whatever good might come of them. I'm very, very concerned, and I think the stakeholder group as a whole is very concerned about the timeline that exists today, and we just consider it really problematic and quite unreasonable. But let's go ahead and move on from here. Yes.
Yeah. Keith, this is Mike Klage. I could just raise one point on that before moving on.
Yeah, please go ahead, Mike. Thank you.
Hi, Mike Pelage, speaking in an individual capacity here and not on behalf of any of the registry clients I work with. My concern, that Keith, though, with if you begin, while I share your concerns about the abruptness of the March 5th deadline, the other thing I'm concerned with is I am working with a number of entities that are considering legal challenges using the ICANN objection procedures. And a lot of those objections are based upon the lack of certain commitments to safeguard certain communities. So if you move the deadline for filing is the 13th, people need to know if they're going to be hitting the moving target or not, what an applicant is committing to or not. So while on one hand I appreciate giving applicants the ability to decide what they're going to commit to, you also need to consider those people that are filing legal objections under the applicant guidebook to know what they're shooting at. So when you move goalposts, you have to consider multiple parties. That's just the point I wanted to raise.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate your comments. I have to admit I'm having a hard time reconciling the requirements with the timeline. Let's go ahead and move on. Thanks to everybody for the discussion and dialogue around the picks. We probably need to, as a community, spend more time on that, but let's move on. So the next item on our list is to discuss the expert working group, the CEO's expert working group on directory services, and the requirement that applicants basically accept whatever comes out of the recommendations from the expert working group. And we've got Amadeo speaking to this issue. Amadeo, briefly, please.
Okay, thanks. Just a short comment before starting that on the peak, and for the staff that's still here, is that please, when you count what you have received on peaks, take into account that many of them, I mean, there are some dozen of community applications that are not supposed to file a peak because they have a special peak. They had the peak from the very beginning as a mandatory thing. And second, there are many exclusive use TLDs that even if they wish it to, they don't know what sort of commitment they have to do.
if they have applied for the TLD that will only be used by themselves. And they don't even see how to commit to that because they could not do otherwise if that's the name of the company, for instance, and they have no intention and no interest in doing that. But it doesn't mean that they don't want to, fulfill public interest obligations. Okay, now on the expert working group thing, will we finally specification 11 and we fall into specification 4, which is who is a specification, who is output specification. And here the amendment has brought us a new obligation in which all new applicants will comply. This is not voluntary like specification 11, this is mandatory, will comply with whatever results come out from this expert group on public directories, public directory services, provided that they are commercially reasonable. That is, that they don't prove that they are commercially unreasonable. And here there are two things that we need to discuss, which in fact are three. The first one is regarding the operations. The second one is the nature of the commitment that has different subparts. On the operations that we, as registry stakeholder group, I think that we all support the work of this expert group. We only would like knowing how to input there as registry constituency, as new TLD applicants, or a specific group of applicants that we'll see at the very end may have some specific needs to be considered by this expert group. But the most important part is not just this operational part, but what's in the contract now. And quite frankly, I'm not completely sure I personally understand the nature of the commitment. From the procedural point of view, what's this? I mean, we have PDPs, we have temporary policies, and we have now the new unilateral right to amend on the site of ICANN, and this is something on top of all that. So it's a specific commitment that it's here that we will abide to something that we don't know, that we haven't not seen, that has not yet been produced, and we don't know when it will come and which form it will take. So what's this? Why don't we follow any of the existing procedures, be that PDP, temporary procedures, specification 1 plus clause 2, or even the unilateral right of amendment? Why ICANN has put that as still a fourth sort of new kind of procedure here? And if this is not a PDP, indeed, for many of us, I think it will raise a serious question of how to handle that, even from a procedural point of view. Some of the few registries will find themselves starting with the current quiz, 1 month later or 3 months later, changing to the expert group result, and 4 or 5 months later, changing to the result of a PDP that clearly says will be, supersede the results. Just it's like a sort of urgent thing, but we don't know anything about, we know the urgency, but we don't know anything that this group that has been working for less than 1 month will produce. So the process, no PDP, no commitment to a PDP, it's very troubling. It's also very troubling the language that's used here, because it's a mix of very legalistic contractual terms and PR bluff. Yeah? Next generation model. What does it mean, a next generation model? Well, something that's not all generation model, but we don't know anything about that. But for instance, why does it say that the limit is commercially reasonable? What does it mean? It's commercially reasonable as in cheap, it means it doesn't cost much money. And why commercially reasonable is the only limit? Let me give you other types of limits that could be there. For some people, let's imagine the exclusive use TLD. If they only use the TLD to register names on the name of the registry itself of affiliates, it might happen that some of the things, even they are very cheap, make no operational or functional sense at all. And even worse, let's imagine, for instance, IDNs. Some of the solutions that could be approved, and we know that from the trouble we had in the past with Port 43, might not be IDN-enabled or handicapped in some of the scripts. In that case, commercial reasonable or not, why should they apply a solution that doesn't serve any purpose? Or, from a legal point of view, what happens with all those registries that are located in places where widespread, unrestricted publication without consensus of the party of personal data of individuals is not legal or is not permitted by law. Europe, for instance, but not only. So the questions that we have, sorry, all these questions here, that means that while we support, I think, the model, we think that the language in this clause is very troubling in different respects. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Amadeo, for that. Jeff, I see your hand up.
Yeah, I'll try to make this really quick. Just to add to what Amadeo said, when that expert group was created, the announcement in the creation of the group said, and even follow-ups have said, the purpose of the expert working group is to feed information into PDPs that the board would initiate. Right? The board has got a power to initiate PDPs on its own. This contract actually takes a completely different approach. This contract says it doesn't matter about PDPs anymore. As long as the expert group working group passes it and there's some public comment period, then it's enforceable against the registries. What we're asking for, what was brought up on the council call when it was discussed as well, is that ICANN go back to its initial language when it created the group. That the purpose of the group is to feed into the policy development process, period. So ICANN actually doesn't even need to put anything into the agreement because already there's a consensus policy process built in. So ICANN, we need to be clear. ICANN, stick to what you said when you initially proposed the group. That's why we all were for the group. That's why we support the group going forward. But to give it this increased significance is not really appropriate, and it's the same comments we have with the unilateral right to amend. Thanks.
To complete on what Jeff has said, sorry, this is Amadeo, how it's designed now is expert working group results, public comment, board decision. And later on, may be superseded by a PDP, which I agree is a completely strange, bizarre, and quite an unacceptable procedure.
Okay. Thanks very much, Jeff and Amadeo. I think very well said. Let's now move on, unless there's any other comments or questions on that particular topic about the expert working group. Let's move on now to the final substantive topic before we had next steps scheduled, which I fear we may not get to. We may have to take that to a list. But the next item was the dialogue on rights protection mechanism enforcement by registries, basically shifting the burden of enforcement from ICANN to registries. And, Jeff, we've got you for that one.
Yeah, I'll try to do this quick as well. So there was some new language added in specification section 1 where it used to just say that ICANN required that registries include in its contract that all ICANN-mandated independently developed RPMs are put into the registrar agreement, but now it added a specific sentence that says, and also now it requires that each registrar that is a party to such agreement to comply with the obligations assigned to registrars under all such RPMs. Now, while that sounds like a pretty simple change and, you know, what's the big deal, what it does now is say that not only is our registries required to pass through the requirements to registrars, but registries are on the hook and ultimately liable for the actions of the registrars if those registrars don't comply with the enforcement mechanisms. And so that to the registries is very disconcerting. We'd like to hear from ICANN as to why there's this sudden shift, and also point out that requiring this compliance function of each of the registries will greatly increase the cost of operating a TLD registry, when those costs can easily be borne by ICANN on a centralized basis and subsumed into its existing compliance function. Moreover, reliance on each individual registry operator will be sure to lead to uneven enforcement, which will ultimately have an adverse effect on competition within the new registry namespace. So only those registries with the actual resources to have a large compliance function will actually be able to enforce these. And even those, those registries that don't have the resources to enforce it or have less of an incentive to enforce it are going to choose the much more less confrontational path, since you're asking these registries to go after their sales channel. And we think, again, that this is going to make it very difficult for the registries. It's going to make it very difficult to have even enforcement. And this is the whole reason why ICANN accredits registrars on a centralized level in the first place, so that it's not up to registries to pick and choose who they enforce things against. And it's up to ICANN on a non-discriminatory basis to go after the registrars. So that's the basic point, is that, give us the context about why these were in there. Let us know why these can't be added to a registrar-specific agreement between ICANN or why ICANN is not taking on the compliance function itself.
Okay. Thanks very much, Jeff. Well said. Let's open it up now. We've just got a few minutes left on the call, but let's make sure that if there's anybody in chat or on the phone who would like to speak up on this issue. All right, I don't see anybody. Going once, going twice. All right, hey, Jordan, you've got about 3 minutes to talk about next steps forward. Do you have any suggestions?
Thanks, Keith. I do think, based on the discussion today, and as Fadi highlighted, that there is a real sort of opportunity here for constructive dialogue between various members of the community and ICANN staff. And I think we need to just look, and, you know, I'm certainly committed, and I know others in the applicant community are, I'm sure others in other portions of the multi-stakeholder community are equally committed as well to making this work. But we need to have a more effective model over the next few months than ICANN publishing a list of changes and us in the community having 30 days to respond and then sort of seeing what emerges from that black box. So I'd love to talk with staff and figure out how we can make that happen. Obviously, we don't have time to sort of work through ideas here. There's some of these topics that are primarily of concern to applicants, and there's even concerns that were not highlighted in the February 5th guidebook changes that already existed in the initial guidebook that I think there's still some worthy discussion around specific contract terms and so on that are perhaps meaningful to applicants but not to the rest of the community. But there's a variety of topics, the PIC specs, the rights protection mechanisms, and so on, that are of concern not just to applicants but to others in the community as well. So we need to look for ways to engage ICANN that can include a high bandwidth conversation and substantive interactive negotiations around the agreements, but make sure that we're getting the voices of all the relevant parties in the community. We'll probably have to take this online, but I'd certainly, you know, if people have specific ideas, I'd love to hear them here. Otherwise, we can start to hopefully find, you know, someone that ICANN can start to work with us to figure out a way forward in order to address many of the concerns that have been raised today.
Thanks very much, Jordan. Excellent comments. Krista, I see your hand up. And then I will, after Krista goes, I'm going to offer the floor, the microphone, to anybody from ICANN staff who would like to make any sort of, you know, sort of closing comments. Don't feel compelled to, but I want to give you that opportunity, and then I'll make just a very brief final statement. Krista, go ahead.
Keith, this is Anthony. I'd like a very brief comment as well. Thank you.
Sure. Okay. So Krista, then Anthony.
Thanks, Keith. This is Krista Papik from Clear Policy and Consulting Services. I just wanted to, first of all, echo what Jordan just said as far as just having it would be really helpful to have a dialogue with ICANN on these topics. I think a lot of these changes came as a big surprise and were unexpected. And, you know, the normal process we follow is the public comment period, and then there's some back and forth, and then there's an ICANN meeting where we discuss these topics. And because we're working on such a compressed timeline, that's not really possible. And I think it would be we'd be able to get a lot further to where we all have a common understanding if there was just a little bit more dialogue. And just by way of example, I mean, you know, Fadi's explanation of the March 5th date for PIC specs was really helpful. It's little things like that, I think, that will make the difference. And just to add one final point here, which is, you know, with respect to the unilateral right to amend, I personally am still not clear as to why that was added back in, and so again, from a dialogue perspective, to understand why some of these things are there might help us to get to something more to get to a more constructive outcome. So, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Krista. Anthony, over to you.
Yes, just one thing to think about when we're talking about self-governance. The way that this whole thing has been set up is that there are all these sort of individual applications and rules for each of them. It might be useful to explore and may help alleviate concerns on the GAC and other places if there's some sort of minimum community standards that, say, the registry stakeholder group as a whole sets up so that we can all subscribe to those standards. And that, I think, would benefit consumers a lot more than trying to pick through different registries with different, you know, commitments. So there might be a subset of commitments that everyone wants to sign on to, and I would suggest that that could be explored and make life easier. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Anthony, for the very constructive comments. Okay, so let me just take this moment.
John Jeffrey.
Yeah, John, go right ahead. I was going to, at that point, offer the floor to ICANN. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Fadi's off the call now, I believe, but we wanted to say on behalf of staff that we thank you for all the inputs. We've been very carefully listening and noting the questions. We'll also look at the record, and we'll try to provide responses as soon as possible.
Great. Thanks very much, John. I appreciate that. So my closing comments, two really. First is I would like to again call for anybody who's on the call or in chat who has a comment or a question or anything that they're seeking clarification on, is you can send me personally an email with the question or comments, because we're collecting and consolidating the various questions that we plan to submit to ICANN as an FAQ request. So please feel free to send those to me. Email address is kdrazek@verisign.com, kdrazek at verisign.com. And finally, I would offer, on behalf of the registry stakeholder group and the members of the NTAG, if the community would value or benefit from another one of these calls in short order to help move this forward, we would be happy to host another one. You know, would certainly look for input on agenda topics and all of that from anyone in the community. If ICANN chooses to host their own on these issues, we would be more than happy to participate.
So, Keith, this is Cyrus Namazi from ICANN. I just wanted to add a little bit to what John was saying in terms of, given the imminent deadlines that we're all facing, if there are questions for clarifications, you can either send them to me or send them to Keith to forward to me, and we'll do our best to respond to them right away.
And we're going to pull off the few that we heard relate to the timeline in the next couple of days and try to respond to those very quickly today or early tomorrow.
All right. Thanks very much, Cyrus and John. Very much appreciated. Appreciate your all's participation on today's call. So any final comments or questions before we wrap here?
Keith, this is Sherry. There has been a question if we can send out the full Adobe Connect chat dialogue along with the MP3.
Yeah, I think that was our plan all along. So yes, okay. Sherry, we will do that. And just for everybody's just so everybody knows, the registry stakeholder group will be posting the link to the MP3, the Adobe Connect chat, and ultimately any transcripts to the stakeholder group webpage, gtldregistries.org. So let's just go ahead and we'll be happy to share that around. I got the website right, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
All right, thank you.
And I believe as well it may be the same information may go up on the GNSO webpage.
All right. Perfect. Thanks very much, Sherry.
You're
all right,
welcome.
Thanks everybody for joining. We're just 5 minutes over. I really appreciate everybody's participation and input, and please look for more developments around this. The reply period is still open until March 20th, so there's an opportunity for further comment on these issues. Thanks all.
And I'd like to thank everybody, all the staff, for their support too. And Tim, we can end the recording now.